Hi, everybody. Welcome to this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly Chicago. It is great to be with you on our weekly podcast brought to you by LootCrate.com. LootCrate, the best surprise you know is coming. Be sure and check it out. Lots of fun, especially around the holiday season. Again, that's LootCrate, the best surprise you know is coming. I am Hub Arkish, along with Arthur Arkish, the editor and managing editor at ProFootballWeekly.com. And Arthur, I don't know that there's a lot of surprises coming for the Chicago Bears at this point. I think the only real surprise we could have now, which would be actually quite the shock, would be if John Fox and his coaching staff survive Black Monday. Maybe they get to Gray Tuesday, but it looks like with just one game to play in Minnesota, regardless of what happens there, that significant change on the coaching front is in store for the Chicago Bears.
Yeah, that obviously looks past week 17. I'll be a little surprised, Hub, if they do go into Minnesota and knock off the Vikings, who are still playing for something, need another win to lock up the NFC's number two seed. But obviously we're looking bigger picture here, and it does seem certain, just about certain, John Fox will be thanked for his services over 3 years by Ryan Pace at some point Sunday, Monday, maybe Tuesday, and that a new coaching search will begin, and that it will be Ryan Pace heading that coaching search. So maybe that's the place to start. I think some Bears fans had a little teeth gnashing going on last weekend after a national report indicated it was Todd Phillips doing the due diligence on the early stages of lining up head coaching candidates. And near as we can tell, that's really not the case at all. It was an NFL media report, and it goes against everything that we understand in the way that this is going to be operating.
Yeah, and we will talk just a little bit about the game in Minnesota, although it doesn't mean all that much. But prior to any of that came this report. And, you know, it was interesting because this is a national reporter who's trying to get out in front of it and talk about the team. And you know, it's possible that Ted Phillips would get involved in terms of some of the technical stuff, in terms of getting permission from other teams to speak to candidates, in terms of filing documentation with the league. But the way the report read is that he was preparing a list of candidates, and that's just not the case. We know
maybe it's more of a navigating a red tape type situation, making sure you're going through the steps properly. Got to have Rooney Rule candidates lined up and all those sorts of things.
Well, that's exactly right. And you know, Arthur, what's interesting is technically, you can't ask for permission to talk to anyone prior to Sunday's game. So, you know, there really would be no reason for Ted Phillips to be involved.
He was just making his list and checking it twice and getting ready for New Year's Day.
Yeah, you're probably right. But what it did was call into question the veracity of the report.
No doubt.
Which is kind of silly because we all know it's coming anyway. It's just it's one of these things where some of us in the media, in terms of trying to claim we reported something first, get out in front of something. And in this case, it was probably a bad report. But at the end of the day, it still gets us to where we need to be. I think what Bears fans need to understand is it wasn't just George McCaskey and Ryan Pace who went out of their way to point out that Ted Phillips was confining himself to the business side of the operation when Ryan Pace was brought on board. It was Ted Phillips who said, you know, listen, the idea that I'm not a football guy is silly. I've been doing this for 20 years, but it's not my area of expertise. It's Ryan's. That's why we put him in charge. Nonetheless, Ted Phillips is the president and CEO of the football team, so it's a pretty good bet that Ryan Pace and Ted Phillips talk every once in a while. But I think the key is where you started. Bears fans need to understand, unless, you know, the ultimate shock wouldn't be if John Fox remained. It would be if both Fox and Pace were gone. And we've heard nothing to suggest that Ryan Pace doesn't still have the full confidence of ownership. And so that being the case, it will absolutely be Ryan Pace not only leading the search, but making the final recommendation and getting his guy. It would take a lot for a Phillips or a McCaskey to be able to talk Pace out of, quote, his guy.
So we've talked a lot on the podcast already, Hub. And again, this Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. Make sure you are subscribed to us by heading over to iTunes. Leave us a rating and a review while you're over there. Big thanks to our producer, Dan Mott, and to our awesome sponsor, Loot Crate. We've talked a lot on the podcast, I believe, about why Ryan Pace does deserve to stick around and lead this search and make his own head coaching hire. And we can debate how much John Fox was really Ryan Pace's hire. And I think we've also discussed the reasons that Fox probably won't stick around. What we haven't talked necessarily about, though, is how attractive this head coaching vacancy is going to be. It looks like there is going to be potentially up to 10 searches that are led by other teams. I don't think it's going to be quite that many, but probably somewhere in the ballpark of 8 to 10 thereabouts. Where do the Bears rank on this list? They've got their quarterback of the future, they think, already, and as long as the next head coach likes Mitch Trubisky, I think that's obviously the most important part of the equation. But what about the other, you know, pieces on this roster? What about having an opportunity to change the fortunes of one of the charter franchises? It almost seems like the next head coach that comes in here has a chance to be kind of the Joe Madden, if you will, of this city. It's really a huge opportunity, I would think.
You know, Arthur, it's interesting. There is a segment of Bears Nation that just wants to go all negative, and they blame everything on the McCaskey family, and they've got this idea that somehow ownership is the reason the Bears aren't winning. And so they want to paint this as a bad situation and suggest that good quality coaches wouldn't want to come here. And then you also get members in the media who either don't do their homework or who just want to be different, saying, oh, well, nobody's going to want to work for them. None of that could be any further from the truth. The bottom line is that there are no better jobs in the National Football League than the Chicago Bears head coaching job. The only ones that would rival it would probably be the New York Giants. I don't think the New York Jets would, just because if it's more of a junior circuit AFL thing. But you look at being in the New York market, the Chicago market. The LA market is the second biggest market in the NFL, but it's proven to be a bad football market for many, many years. And so, you know, really, unless there was an unworkable situation with restrictions that you had to spend less money, you had to do this, you had to do that, none of which is true, there's no better job than the Chicago Bears. Again, maybe the New York Giants. Those are the two jobs that are competing right now. But any candidate who wants a head coaching job would be, you know, over the top to get this job, just because it's in one of the best markets in the NFL, because it is the most historic franchise in the NFL, and because Bears fans and Bear Nation is a great place to work. Now, when you add to that the presence of Mitch Trubisky, that makes this really interesting, because you get certain coaches who know that without the quarterback, you got to do everything else. But without the quarterback, you're not going anywhere. Well, there is a belief in scouting circles that the Bears may have finally found their quarterback. Trubisky's got a long way to go, but this kid was drafted on traits. Nobody really knew about him as much as Ryan Pace did, because nobody else did their homework like he did. We only had the 13 games of tape from North Carolina. But now we've seen this kid start 11 games in the NFL and seen some of the things he can do. There's some real excitement around Mitch Trubisky, and so this will absolutely be one of the plum jobs. And I'm hearing the same reports as you about 9, 10, 11 openings. I think it's going to be more like 6 or 7, to be honest with you. But whether it's 7 or 10, this is going to be one that the top candidates will all be the most interested in.
My guess, Hub, is the reason it's going to end up being 6 or 7, because I agree with you, or whatever it is, 6, 7, 8 instead of 9, 10, 11, 12. I don't think there's that many good replacements out there. And I think coaches are probably going to realize that sometimes the grass isn't always greener. That's not going to be the case in here, Chicago. We don't believe this has run its course with John Fox. But these guys don't just grow on trees. And you could argue there's a shortage of good head coaches to begin with. And we can get into that, too, as we continue to discuss candidates. But, yeah, the Bears should be near the top of the list. We do agree on that. And it's important just to reemphasize what we said at the top. Part of the reason they're going to be at the top of the list is because there is a belief that Todd Phillips is removed from this situation. You're not going to have to worry about meddling. I do have a slight concern, though, because it does seem like when you're looking for new coaches now, many of them are wielding more power than we've seen in the past. And if you've got Ryan Pace, is it fair to kind of view Ryan Pace as somewhat of a lame duck GM in being empowered to make this coaching search? And do you think potentially the presence of Pace and his control over the 53 and all football operations is going to dissuade certain candidates from being viable?
No, you know, Arthur, I don't think there is such a thing as a lame duck GM, because he's making the hire. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that he's being allowed to do it says he's going to continue to run this for a while. And again, you know, the knowledgeable people around the league will tell you he hadn't done that bad a job. He's missed right on a couple of guys in free agency. You don't bat 1,000 in his job personnel-wise. And so, no, I don't think that there will be any real concern there. And, you know, when you talk about the issue of working with a GM, unless you're talking about trying to bring in a Bill Belichick, an Andy Reid, or, you know, you look at some of the really successful young guys, maybe a John Gruden coming back. These guys don't come in and command that kind of power, because that's what we're talking about, a guy who wants complete control of the operation. You don't get that in the NFL unless you've earned it. And I don't think those are the candidates the Bears are looking for. The Bears are looking for an outstanding, innovative, preferably offensive, but more importantly, outstanding innovative mind, because you can be a former defensive coach but bring in a great offensive coordinator. This idea that the Bears' next coach has to be an offensive guy is just silly.
Right.
But it wouldn't hurt if you had a really strong offensive guy, particularly if there was some chance you could keep Vic Fangio. We'll get to that in a couple minutes. So, again, no, I don't see any drawback to it. Now, I've spent a fair amount of time with Ryan Pace. Know that he is an easily likable guy. He's easy to talk to. He is a grinder. He does the work. Nobody's going to worry that they're getting in with the wrong guy. So, to me, you know, when you add that qualification, it actually makes us a little more attractive, not necessarily, you know, less attractive.
A couple quick plugs. You mentioned the importance of not keying in on an offensive-minded coach and finding the best coach at our website this morning. Two fresh pieces up from our colleagues. Greg Gabriel talks about just that and how rather than looking for a qualification of an offensive-minded background head coach, there can't be enough stressed on the importance of building the right offensive staff, regardless of which of the three phases the next head coach comes from. Definitely check that out at ProFootballWeekly.com. And then Eric Edholm has a really nice column, too, just discussing Sean McVay and how he is both kind of the best and the worst thing to happen to the 2018 coaching search, because a lot of teams are going to think they're going to go out there and find the next Sean McVay, this, you know, maybe not 31, but an up-and-comer who can transform a franchise. And I like Eric's line in the column, Sean McVay's don't grow on trees. So just a couple things to consider. And then Hub has a great feature up this morning too, just kind of looking at how we expect Black Monday to unfold. Obviously, we're talking about it some of it here on the podcast, but I would implore our listeners to go check out all of those pieces at ProFootballWeekly.com, because it is going to be a very eventful next week and probably, you know, coming weeks ahead. Let's remind everyone that if you want to interview coaches that are going to be in the playoffs, this isn't likely to get resolved overnight. We're not going to likely be talking about the next head coach of the Bears next Tuesday or Wednesday, I don't believe.
Well, you won't be talking about, you know, the guy that's going to get the job, but we should have
the interviews will start rolling.
Yeah, we'll have a pretty good idea by Wednesday of the kind of guy that Ryan Pace is looking at, who he's talking to. My guess is we'll be able to confirm by Wednesday that they're not all former offensive coordinators. Arthur, I think the most interesting piece of all of this is the Vic Fangio situation. The Bears did offer Fangio an extension of his contract after last season. He did not accept. It could just be he wanted more money. It could be he didn't want to stay in Chicago. It could be we don't know. You know, it could be a lot of things. We also assume that he will not be a candidate for the head coaching job, because if he was, you would think they might have let Fox go a couple weeks ago, make Fangio their interim head coach, and see what happens. But there's actually a counterargument for that, too. If you believe that it's impossible to succeed right now with this offensive staff and where the game planning and play calling is, you wouldn't want to put a guy in an interim situation that you knew he was going to fail if you wanted to give him a chance to look good. That's unlikely. It seems more likely that Fangio is not a candidate for the head coaching job. But I think it's a valid concern about losing him only because of the job he's done. The Bears' defense is pretty close to being ready to win right now if it's healthy. They need another pass rusher. They need another safety. But even with those limitations, they've played really well at times this year, overachieved for sure. And, you know, it's almost like you've got to replace two head coaches if both Fox and Fangio go.
Right. And, you know, we've talked about it before. You've got scheme continuity you would like to maintain. You have I agree that this Bears unit is pretty darn good, has exceeded expectations, but of course we need to point out how different it could potentially look. You got huge decisions looming, not only on Kyle Fuller, but Prince Amukamara. I mean, if you're turning over three quarters of the secondary again, or half of the secondary again, then you're exposing yourself to a potential kind of drop off or sort of regression, if you will, before you're able to get back to where you need to be. So, you know, maybe Vic Fangio, I don't know, maybe we've been reading the tea leaves wrong and he will be a candidate. It would potentially help the Bears or other teams who may have an eye on Vic Fangio because of what we just discussed and the allure of these young guys. Vic is a lifer, an assistant NFL lifer, so he's not going to be falling under that category if teams are determined to go try and get the next Sean McVay. But I've said it before, Hub, I like Ryan Pace, and I think he has earned the right to say, but I also think that if our report was correct from last month and that Vic has already been disqualified as a candidate, if it's not for the reason you just alluded to, because there's no offensive staff here for him to have a chance, I find it to be a little bit concerning because I think Ryan Pace is really sharp, and I just, it doesn't, I don't know, it just doesn't make a ton of sense to me. I'm having a hard time reconciling why he wouldn't be a part of the discussion.
A part of the discussion as a head coach or part of the discussion of retaining him?
Yes, as a potential replacement here. If it's not, as you said, the possibility that he just wouldn't have a shot on an interim basis, and then maybe that wouldn't, you know, endear him more.
Our 3 years with Vic Fangio, and I've seen him at least once a week every Thursday when he's taken the podium at Hallis Hall and had a chance to talk to him a little bit beyond that. I don't pretend to know him well. I would love to consider him to be the head coach of my team. He checks all the boxes. He's a brilliant defensive coach. His players obviously love playing for him. He's great with the media, which isn't a qualification to be a coach, but it just suggests he's great with people because he knows how to be comfortable and open and blunt without giving away any secrets. You know, one of the big failings of John Fox in his 3 years here is that, you know, he has treated the media like the enemy from day one. And listen, what our listeners and coaches need to understand is not about me being a member of the media having my feelings hurt. The media is the conduit to the fans. And so if you're treating the media like the enemy, you're treating the fans like the enemy. And you've seen that reaction from Bears fans as soon as things have started to go wrong with Fox. Fangio gets that. He's not like that at all. He can handle almost everything. Now, that said, he's been with Ryan Pace for 3 years, and Pace has been a lot closer to him and spent a lot more time than I have. He's had a number of stops around the NFL and one head coaching interview in all that time, and that was a token interview from the 49ers before the disastrous Jim Tomsula hiring. So, you know, I, again, would love to see him considered. But there's got to be a reason that nobody, because coming out of San Francisco, coming back to the league from Stanford, everybody knew what a great defensive coach he was, and yet he wasn't getting interviews. And 4 years there in San Francisco, you know, three NFC title games. You know, there were plenty of chances for other teams to go and say, hey, let's talk to Vic Fangio, and they haven't. I don't understand it. But people need to understand that's a reality, and that probably has something to do with what's going on now.
So let's stick with the Stanford ties for a moment, Hub, unless you have another direction you want to take this in, because I feel like we've done a good job of breaking down how we've arrived here, and we haven't done a ton of talk about candidates and the best ones and the ones we'd like to see seriously considered as the 16th head coach in Bears history. No, I'm not talking about Jim Harbaugh or any Stanford connection there. David Shaw, the current coach at Stanford, any NFL insider, anyone in an NFL circle that you talk to and you mention David Shaw's name, I feel like there is it's fairly universal in that he is very highly regarded and that he seems to be ready for this shot. And in the past, teams have been interested and he hasn't shown a willingness to be ready to leave that Stanford position. What do you think of David Shaw? Because I keep coming back to him, and he's at the top of my sort of imaginary list, if you will. You look at his background from working with guys like Jim Harbaugh and from playing under guys like Bill Walsh and the weekly prepared unit that he marches out and all the players that he has turned into NFLers and just the smart, detailed approach that he seems to have. I think David Shaw checks off all the boxes as a potential NFL head coach.
So, Arthur, there are two names that are going to be, whether it's six openings or nine openings or seven, whatever it is, there are two names that are going to be at the top of every list, and then there are two more names that are going to be on almost every list. The two almost every list, I believe, are Dave Tobe, the special teams coach at Kansas City, and Josh McDaniels, the offensive coordinator at New England. There'll be a bunch of other names on multiple lists, too, but these two guys are ready. I can't see this cycle going without those two guys getting jobs. The other two names are going to be Jim Harbaugh and David Shaw, because everybody knows, yeah, these guys look like they would be outstanding head coaches. In the case of Jim Harbaugh, I would say almost for an absolute fact, there's no way he's leaving Ann Arbor yet. I do believe Jim will be back in the NFL at some point, but he hasn't won at Ann Arbor yet, not even a Big Ten title, let alone a national title. So stop the silliness of saying, well, if we call him, it'll make a difference. Harbaugh's not coming back to the NFL yet. In the case of David Shaw, it's a little different. I don't know him as well as I know Jim, but everybody I talk to tells me that he is one of these guys who gets the advantage of the possibility of a job for life, and he may have it at Stanford. Mm-hmm. He's comfortable there. I believe his dad, you know, was there at one point. I don't know that for a fact, but I know that there's family ties. And he's one of these guys who has shown no real interest in the NFL. So do I think he would be an outstanding candidate? Yeah, I think he could be. Do I think that he's coming to the NFL? No, I don't think he is. And so, you know, that's why there's not a lot of conversation about it. But if I'm wrong, if he was interested in making the leap to the NFL, yes, I think he'd be an outstanding choice. And the Bears could be an interesting possibility because Mitch Trubisky is here. And Shaw did work with Vic Fangio at Stanford when they were all there under Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah, certainly the Shaw got a firsthand look at Mitch Trubisky in that Sun Bowl 2 years ago. North Carolina normally came back and beat Stanford in that one. I hadn't actually even really thought about that part of it, but I just, again, the conversations you have with NFL people, I feel like always end, if David Shaw's name is mentioned, I feel like is normally kind of given the seal of approval, if you will. So let's go on the flip side of it. Guys that maybe are more familiar either to us or Ryan Pace, what about the guys in New Orleans right now? Is that a fair place to go? And Pete Carmichael is maybe the first one that comes to mind because he's offense. But Dennis Allen is someone that we thought could be out of a job as recently as week two this season, and he's overseen a remarkable turnaround. And obviously Allen just got back to New Orleans, I want to say.
Him and Ryan were never there together.
No, they were. That's what I was going to say. He's back on his second tenure now, but they definitely overlapped, I believe, for a handful of years. I'll go ahead and check on that, but Allen is back in New Orleans. This is not his first stop.
Yeah, but
there.
His first tenure was a while ago. He made several stops
I'm 99%
before.
Sure. I'm going to tell you right now.
Well,
why don't you tell me about Pete Carmichael?
As Arthur's punching it up on the computer, I will tell you guys, Pete Carmichael is an excellent offensive football coach. But this is where you get to the danger of saying, well, we got to have an offensive coordinator as our head coach, because there are reasons to suggest as good an offensive mind and as good an offensive coordinator as he is, he may not be head coaching material. And there's a couple things there. When you talk to other people around the league, they tell you that this is not a shining personality, that this is not a guy who's going to do well necessarily standing up in front of a locker room full of players, and certainly isn't going to come off well with the media. And then there's the most important piece of all to me, and I've talked about this a few times on TV and on the radio, so if you've heard this, forgive me, but I think it's critical. In 2012, when Sean Payton was suspended for the year, he and Carmichael had already been together for 6 years. Carmichael was always his right hand on offense. Carmichael, by the way, is the only guy that Sean Payton has ever allowed to call plays at New Orleans besides himself, and he's done some of it extensively at times. But in 2012, when Sean Payton knew he was out for the year, he passed over his right-hand guy, Carmichael, and made Joe Vitt the interim head coach. And Joe Vitt was suspended for the first 6 weeks, and for those 6 weeks, they made Aaron Cromer the interim head coach. There was a reason for that. Now, it's 5 years later. You know, maybe Carmichael should be a candidate. I just don't think that he's going to be at the top of a head coaching candidate list for anybody because of personality issues, and because while he's a great offensive mind, he may not be head coaching material.
All right, so yeah, Dennis Allen and Ryan Pace absolutely overlapped for, it looks like, 8 years here. Allen was working with the D-line and then the secondary, and Ryan Pace, we all know, worked his way up the ladder.
But when did Allen leave New Orleans?
For his first stint, he headed to Denver in 2011. So mm-hmm. He was in New Orleans from 2006 through 2010.
Right, so through 2006, 2010, Ryan Pace had not yet ascended to anywhere near the number two job in the front office, and Dennis Allen was a position coach. They were in the same city together, but the idea that there's a strong, you know, coaching connection there, to me, it's not the kind of connection you make when you're looking for a guy going to get somebody he knows to be his head coach. So,
okay.
Yeah, they know each other, but again, you know, Dennis Allen wasn't on anybody's list for a second chance. He failed in Oakland, and he wasn't on anybody's list for a second chance until this year. He's done a great job this year, But they also failed miserably on defense there every year until this year. So I think of the two, Allen may be more likely candidate than Carmichael only because he may be more head coaching material. But I think people are making too much of the New Orleans connection on those two guys.
Okay, yeah, and I can't say for sure what the level of familiarity or how close or not close a relationship between the two is. It would be a little bit ironic, though, as Dennis Allen, of course, was John Fox's first defensive coordinator in Denver. So
and again,
a small NFL world. Maybe we should just stress that part of it.
To be clear, Arthur, they may be best friends.
Sure.
I mean, you may be right. I don't know anything about that. I do know that at the time they worked together, Dennis Allen was a position coach. He had never been a coordinator at that point. And Ryan at that point was basically a scout. You know, he was a personnel evaluator, but he certainly was nowhere near being ready to be a GM.
So we're almost out of time on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast, but we want to continue trying to spin forward this conversation. We will be at Hallis Hall Thursday. We'll be there. We'll be there throughout the rest of this thing through Sunday night and when things start to get really hectic. But
it's kind of what it's become under John Fox. It's just a thing, you know. It's I'm agreeing. I'm not making light of your comment, Arthur. Let's just take a couple more minutes though, because that's just a couple names, and I think there's other names that could be more likely in Chicago. I think you're going to hear a ton of Matt Nagy, who is the offensive coordinator and the play caller in Kansas City right now. You're going to hear Matt LaFleur. And some interesting kind of insight on that. Apparently, LaFleur and McVay have an understanding that LaFleur could leave the Rams and go be an offensive coordinator somewhere else as well. Normally, they don't allow you to make lateral moves, but because they're very good friends and because McVay is calling his own plays and because he knows LaFleur is going to struggle to get a head job without calling plays, LaFleur could be in play both as a head coach or as an offensive coordinator in the right situation. Obviously, you've heard the Philadelphia names, which are Frank Reich and John DeFilippo. Again, these are a couple guys who haven't called plays, but who've done great jobs with offenses and with Carson Wentz. And then, you know, Arthur, I mentioned Josh McDaniels. The other name that you just don't hear enough of, as far as I'm concerned, is Matt Patricia. He may have had the best coaching job this year of any of these assistants when you realize the players, the no-name defense that he has put together with New England and the way he turned that thing around. And so that's another name I would keep my ears open for.
Yeah, I mean, along the same lines of Dennis Allen, Matt Patricia wasn't in trouble, but it was around the same time. Remember, after week two, the Saints were just hemorrhaging points and yards, and the Patriots were actually the same boat, too, and they went on a pretty remarkable run. Now, of course, with both Matt Patricia and Josh McDaniels, obviously McDaniels has already had an opportunity and a head spot, but there is going to be that stigma of leaving the Bill Belichick cocoon, if you will, and what happens next. It's fair to at least mention, and then I think a decent segue, I know our guy Greg Gabriel really likes both Matt Nagy and Dave Taub, and they're both now in the Andy Reid coaching tree, which has frankly been a little bit more successful, has bloomed a little more frequently than
the
Bill
NFL
Belichick
right
one.
Now.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah, I realize that Sean McDermott is off that tree. Ron Rivera, even though he was the Bears defense coordinator, is off that tree. John Gruden, you know, worked with Andy Reid. Mike McCarthy worked with Andy Reid. So that's a pretty impressive tree right now. And the other thing that interests me is trees in general. Yes, Belichick coaches have struggled. Charlie Weiss was a disaster. Romeo Crennel was okay. He wasn't awful, but he was just okay. And Bill O'Brien, you know, is in trouble down in Houston.
Should he be is another question.
Yeah.
That's for another podcast. We'll talk
but
about
the
that
GM
later today.
The GM tree is really interesting when you think about it. You got Thomas Dimitroff knocking him dead in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. You got a pretty nice job so far with Robinson in Tennessee, and you got Robert Quinn not doing bad in Detroit. So his front office
Dan
people
Quinn
are pretty
too.
Good. And keep an eye on Nick Caserio. His personnel director supposedly could be a package deal with McDaniels in New York. So you're going to hear about a ton of Belichick people, regardless of what their results have been so far.
Hub said Robert Quinn. He meant Dan Quinn. And an interesting stuff going on
No,
to the
Robert
north
Quinn.
Of us.
The GM in Detroit.
Right. It's not Dan Quinn either. Excuse me. It's Bob. Oh, okay. Robert. Bob.
Yeah,
all right. You were closer than I was.
Yes.
I got Dan Quinn in my head because we were talking about the control of the 53 earlier in the podcast. Right. And I was just thinking, actually, some of the more recent coaching hires have been handed that control. But that's kind of too much to get into here. Hub, anything to add on the Bears Vikings? Anyone care about a minute, 2 minute preview of what's coming Sunday? We should just stress that the Vikings do need to win to lock up a first round bye.
Yeah, late in the week, neither Josh Sitton or Bobby Massey were practicing. Kyle Long's already on IR. Vikings have one of the best fronts in the National Football League. how do you predict anything but a painful day for Mitch Trubisky? Vikings have to show up. I think the Saints are a 4 o'clock start. Not the Saints, but the Panthers, I think, are a 4 o'clock start with the Falcons. If the Panthers win, the Vikings need to win to keep a bye. That's huge. If the Vikings were to lose and the Panthers win, the Vikings got to play a week later. They're not going to get caught napping. And so I would be surprised if the Bears even played them as close as they did. Was it week 5 or whatever week it was when Trubisky got the
Monday
first
night.
Start? It's hard to be focused on days like this. So, you know, maybe Jordan Howard has a decent day. The Bears defense could still. But actually, what's interesting about the game, if you're an NFL fan, is Case Keenum's been struggling a little bit the last couple weeks. As good as that whole story is, he's played a couple of his weaker games the last couple weeks. So that's something to keep an eye on. But at the end of the day, I don't see the Bears with really any chance to win this football game. So what you do is you watch the young people. You know, you watch how Trubisky reacts to that. You see if you can get any more excited about some of the other people on the roster. I'd keep a very close eye on what happens with Kyle Fuller and Prince Amukamara, because I just couldn't feel any more strongly. Bears should re-sign both of them, but have to re-sign Fuller. Cornerback has been a problem for the Bears since Peanut Tillman and Tim Jennings in 10 and 11. Remember, in 12, Peanut Tillman was hurt. To now finally have a pair that played well this year and watch them both walk out of town free agents, to me, that'd be a huge mistake.
Maybe to put a bow on this thing with the Vic Fangio talk at the top, who was tougher on Kyle Fuller than anyone else, both publicly and privately? Of course, it was Vic Fangio. He had Fuller had absolutely been in Vic's doghouse last season. There was talk of confidence needing repair and maybe mental toughness needing to be built up a little bit, whether it was a contract year, whether it was that tough love from Vic Fangio. We have seen the absolute best from Kyle Fuller, including one of his better games as a pro last week, and that's going to be the biggest personnel decision I believe Ryan Pace has to make.
And Arthur, it's interesting that who has been Kyle Fuller's biggest fan this year, it's Fangio, who's been willing to go to the mic and talk about how well he's played, while John Fox, and some of this is just Foxy's effort never to say much about anything, but Fox has refused to go too over the top. Fangio's gone out of his way to talk about what a great job Fuller has done.
And a great test, too, in the finale, because Stephon Diggs, not Adam Thielen, has actually been the Vikings' most productive wide receiver over the past month of the season. Of course, Stephon's going to line up on the outside. He'll see plenty of Kyle Fuller. Adam Thielen will be working primarily out of the slot. So that's about what we have today for the Bears-Vikings in particular, and really for the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. We got to go tape the Chicago Football Now TV show, but make sure you keep it plugged into ProFootballWeekly.com, ProFootballWeekly.com/Bears. We're going to be covering all the Black Monday craziness, and we can't wait to bring it with you, to do it with you. Thank you so much for being with us on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. For Hub, I am Arthur. Big thank you to Dan Mott, our sponsor, Loot Crate, and we will talk to you again next week. We hope everyone has a very, very happy New Year.